some can't see me over there. Maybe they just want to go to sleep during the sermon, sat there deliberately. I don't know. Anyway, before I forget, there's a member survey that the Home Office is asking you if you could complete before tomorrow evening. I sent it to everybody on the mailing list. If any of you for some reason did not get it and you'd like a copy, please call me and I'll make sure you get one emailed to you. But it is due by tomorrow night at 6. It asks a lot of questions. The whole idea is to try and improve the church and try to serve the members more effectively. So you can put all kinds of things in there, like, you know, we desperately need a new minister here in Lansing, that kind of thing. You know, put whatever you want. I mean, I won't see it, so, you know, you can write whatever you want. Just try and be nice. Got a couple of announcements here. First of all, from Dick and Carolyn, one of their employees at Professional Eye Care has been diagnosed with breast cancer. Her name is Lisa Cross. Could you please pray for her? Is she a young lady? 29. Very young. Yeah. Please pray for Lisa. Then also a reminder, 2 weeks from today, we have our Thanksgiving potluck. Please sign the list on what you would be able to bring. Is the list over there, Ron? Do you know? Where's the list? It says, please sign the list.
It will be.
It will be. Okay. Fine. Good. Are you in charge of the Thanksgiving dinner?
Yeah. We have
okay. Good. Just remember they don't allow beer in here, Jeff. Okay, that's in 2 weeks. I think that's it for the announcements. Nothing else at this point. Let me take this thing off here. It gets a bit burdensome. I'm hoping I can get rid of this in a few days. I still might have it for a few more weeks. I'm going to put it on the floor because I got up a few days ago. I put it on the beside the sink in the kitchen while I was preparing some food. Forgot it was there, and I moved, fell down, broke. And I've only got 2 hours to get it reconnected before I have to go to the hospital. So that was a bit of a problem. So anyway, I don't want to do that again. You know, listening to Terry, I had a thought. I occasionally have a thought. Listening to Terry, I had a thought. You know, he mentioned the young people coming out of Egypt. And I was reading a book recently about Jonathan Edwards, who led the Great Awakening in 1743, around that period, in the American colonies. That led eventually up to the Revolutionary War. But Jonathan Edwards was a fiery preacher whose theology was incorrect. I have to say that. He was a hellfire and damnation preacher. But the thing is, he inspired the young people in Connecticut to such an extent that there was what we would call a revival. There was a turning back to God. It was a major turning point in American history. And it was a very interesting book. And basically what it came down to was the fact that in the 1740s, all the land had been settled. So there were the young people growing up really had no hope of having their own land, their own farms. Therefore, they couldn't get married. Therefore, they couldn't really have much of a life. And this led to a turning back to God. And, you know, you wonder if something similar might not happen again. I mean, it'd be nice to think it would happen again because, you know, here we are now. We've got this Occupy Wall Street movement, lots of young people out there blaming everything on corporations. I think government is far more to blame. But, you know, who knows what could happen. There might be more frustration, which would lead in turn to turning back to God. It's happened twice in American history, the 1740s and also just before the Civil War. And in the 1740s, it led to unifying the colonies, and then that led to the Revolutionary War. In the 1850s, it led to the Civil War. So, you know, you had two turning back to God movements that were very big. Of course, you know, they kept Sunday and they didn't understand everything we understand. But having said that, it's still interesting. I wasn't expecting to give the sermon today, but Mike wanted to go over to Grand Rapids. There's some new people turning up there today. And so he asked me if I'd give the sermon today. And I said I'd be happy to do that. You know, originally I was supposed to be at ABC this month, so I wasn't supposed to be here, but I'm not able to go down to ABC, so I'm here. A couple of things that people have talked to me about recently tied together. In fact, I've had more than two couples talk to me about their teenage children, bad-mouthing them, answering them back, being critical of their parents, and, you know, tension at home, strife at home as a result of that. I know these things happen. I mean, we went through that with ours as well years ago when they were in that age group. And I had somebody send me an article a couple of days ago, which I think ties in with this, and I thought I'd just read you a couple of paragraphs from it. It's from Britain, but I'm sure the statistics are not much different here in the United States. The breakdown of the family is as bad in the UK as it is in the US, roughly the same, 50% divorce rate in both countries. And not that divorce is the only factor, you know, drug addiction, alcoholism, and all these kind of things are just the same over there as they are here. But the headline in the paper was, almost half of all Britons think children are becoming feral, like animals. A shock survey reveals how we're turning our backs on youngsters. It goes on to say British adults are turning their backs on children and young people and see them as violent animals who are beyond help. A recent survey of more than 2,000 people found almost half believe that British youngsters are becoming feral and behaving like animals, while a worrying 10% believe that badly behaved children over the age of 10 are beyond help. Now, what I found particularly interesting is the next paragraph. This was a report from a respected charity in Britain. The charity has drawn comparisons between Britain and continental Europe, where people are said to be far more supportive of youngsters and parents more willing to help each other out within their communities. So this is a problem that is peculiar, if you like, to, you know, the white English-speaking countries, the US, the UK, Australia, Canada. It is not a problem that bedevils many of the countries of Western Europe. The problem lies somewhat in our culture. You know, why is it such a problem in our culture? I'm reminded, too, and I know I've mentioned this when I first came back from Ghana many years ago, but after September the 11th in 2001, I was in Ghana, and I remember all these pictures of Osama bin Laden for sale. And I've told you this before, but, you know, I asked one of the Ghanaian ministers, why are all these pictures there? You know, why is the guy so popular? And his response was, people believe that America's trying to take over the world and Osama bin Laden will stop them. And that's why, you know, they like Osama bin Laden. Now, these people are not Muslims. So I asked him more questions, and I came to the conclusion that the reason why they think we're trying to take over the world is because our television programs are viewed by so many of the people in those countries now. They've had satellite television for almost 20 years. And they get all these TV shows from the U.S. You know, they only get the best programs from, in other words, the worst programs, the most popular programs are the ones that they get. They don't get National Geographic specials. And they watch those programs. And, you know, sometimes since then, whenever I've had the opportunity, I've asked people what they think of our television programs. And the number one thing that comes out, I've heard this so many times, the number one thing I've heard said is that they cannot understand why we allow our children to badmouth us, to answer us back, to be disobedient, which is a no-no in their culture. Now, whenever I hear that, I come back with another response. I say, well, please realize television does not reflect reality in the United States. It doesn't at all. The way that people behave in television programs is not the way people behave in daily life. And I said, I know many people who would not tolerate that in their own families, and many people who try to teach their children to live a Christian way of life. So, you know, I do say what I can to try to create a better impression. But the fact is, of course, that television is a major influence, not just television, movies, of course, as well, and music. Music is another big influence. And all of these things give a bad impression of the United States. They do not leave a good impression at all. And not just of the U.S., by the way, but Britain as well, because a lot of British programs are shown throughout Africa, throughout countries that used to be ruled by Britain, so they know Britain quite well. They watch these programs. British comedies, you know, some of them are very good, but some are just disgusting. And people see these things, and, you know, that gives them a bad impression of Britain, as well as having a bad impression of the United States. Now, it hasn't always been this way, that people have had to put up with all this bad mouthing by their children. You know, I can remember when I was about 14, I called my mother a name, and I remember my father came into the room and hit me, you know, with the back of his hand like that and knocked me to the floor and made it absolutely clear if I ever did that again, I'd be thrown out of the house. And I was about 14. I never did it again. Somebody else here was telling me something similar about his father, who said that if he ever did that, he would be knocked into next week, which pretty much amounts to the same thing. So this was, about 20 years ago, Ron? It was Ron telling me, so I hope he doesn't mind, about 20, 25 years ago. So, you know, those things, that's the way parents reacted back then. Of course, it's somewhat different now. You try and do that now, you know, you, as a parent, as a father, what would happen? Your kid's already been told at school there's a 1-800 number they can call, and they'll the social services will zoom in, rescue them, and, you know, set them up somewhere without parents. So, you know, that was something that we didn't have 25 years ago, but it's there now. You know, I'm reminded of a scripture in Isaiah chapter 3, if you just have a look there for a moment. Now, I'm just speculating here. This is a bit of speculation because it's difficult to know exactly what this scripture applies to or what time period it applies to. But it says in verse 12 of Isaiah, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them." You know, there are places where most of us as adults would not want to go late at night. I mean, downtown Lansing, for example, I certainly wouldn't want to walk in downtown Lansing late at night, and certainly wouldn't anywhere in Detroit. And there's other places as well where I wouldn't want to go late at night. I mean, again, England has got its areas. When I go over to see my brothers, we like to go out for a drink together. You know, we avoid the city center at weekends because young people have taken over the city center at weekends. And most of them get drunk, and then they get violent. And if they're not violent, they're throwing up all over the place. So you don't want to see that. And, you know, when people are drunk, the behavior can be very embarrassing. And, you know, we just stay away from some of those areas. And fortunately, we're older. We can afford the gas, so we drive out to somewhere nicer and more respectable. But as for my people, children are their oppressors. There is a fear of young people today that, you know, we did not have in previous generations. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, it also mentions that women rule over them. And if I can say something here, and I'll say it as tactfully as possible, because I don't want to offend anybody, but I heard something interesting some years ago, and it made me think. It was from Eleanor Roosevelt. Now, I didn't know her personally. Eleanor Roosevelt died in 1955. But in the year that I was born, she had a radio program. And I heard a recording of this program when I was over in England a few years ago. It was a documentary about Eleanor Roosevelt. It was quite interesting. It was on the radio. She had this radio program that ran for at least one season over here in the United States. And Eleanor Roosevelt made an interesting point. She said, you know, all the great social reforms have taken place since women got the vote. And I thought that was interesting, an interesting observation. You know, women are much more nurturing and much more caring than men are. Before women had the vote, basically all government did was take care of defense and policing and make sure that the money was sound money, because that was the only way to prosperity. I saw a documentary on prohibition recently on PBS, very good documentary series, and it brought out the first law that was passed when women got the vote was prohibition, which, you know, was a big failure. But then after that came all the other social reforms, and those social reforms, which all stemmed from the desire to care for people, the less fortunate people, have led us down the road to financial ruin, is what's happened. And we can't just blame the ladies, because some guys would vote for the same thing, and some women. Margaret Thatcher, for example, was, you know, much more of the male mindset that government shouldn't do any of those things. So it's not exactly a clear-cut division. But I think Eleanor Roosevelt's point was a good one, that all of those social reforms have come about in the last 90 years. And included in those social reforms are laws that now restrict fathers from being able to fulfill their role as fathers. You know, now that there's so many laws that say you can't do this, you can't do that, and, you know, so many options that your children have, if they feel like they're being mistreated at home. So it makes it very difficult, therefore, for a father to, you know, be in charge at home like he used to be. So just something there to think about. We're talking here about one of the Ten Commandments. Look at Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. The fifth commandment, verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. See, it's the first commandment with promise. It's described that way by the Apostle Paul. The first commandment with promise. The promise is to young people, if they honor their parents, which includes obeying their parents, the only exception to that should be if their parents want them to disobey God. But otherwise, we should obey our parents. And that goes for people my age, too. I mean, my parents are dead, but if your parents are still alive, that you know, commandment is still there to honor your father and your mother. And, you know, one reason given for it is because that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. The breakdown of the family in our societies has led to an increase in law and order. It's led to a lot of young people being alienated from their parents, from their families. Their life expectancy is much lower. They end up on the streets. They end up often doing drugs or alcoholics or both. They end up in gangs, all kinds of things, which, of course, reduce their life expectancy. So it's true what it says here, that if you have that good relationship with your parents and you maintain that close family unit which God wants us to have, then your days will be long upon the land. But of course, it's also the case that we don't teach the Ten Commandments in school anymore. It's ironic that public schools were first started in the 1800s specifically to make sure that children learned the Ten Commandments. That was the reason why they were started. Because with industrialization, people were leaving the farms, moving to the cities, and in the cities where their parents were often working 14 or even 16-hour days, 6 days a week, they were not receiving any spiritual instruction. And a lot of middle-class people feared there would be a breakdown in law and order. So it was the middle class that started the drive for public schools, and they started in New York, in the state of New York. And they were specifically intended to teach the Ten Commandments. And the Catholics retaliated, or reacted, by starting Catholic schools, because they did not want Catholic children to learn the Protestant Ten Commandments, which are, as you know, somewhat different from the Catholic Ten Commandments. And that's the origin of our modern school system. But somewhere along the line, of course, as we all know, since World War II, with the secularization of society, then public schools are no longer allowed to teach the Ten Commandments. When I was in school, we had to learn the Ten Commandments. And we didn't just learn them once. You know, we had to learn them regularly. So we knew them. And that's the way it was, I think. And it was on the walls in many schools. I've seen it on the walls of schools a long time ago. You don't get them on the walls now. But, you know, kids knew what the Ten Commandments were. And they knew this commandment, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. So as parents, we need to teach our children the Ten Commandments. I think we have a tendency today, partly because of the society in which we live, where there's so little time. We will teach our children something once and think they've gotten it. But that isn't the case. Something like the Ten Commandments needs to be repeated on a regular basis. In a fun way. I mean, we can teach them, well, partly in a fun way, not exactly completely in a fun way, but, you know, we can have Bible quizzes, for example, which is a fun way of teaching the Ten Commandments. But we need to make sure our children really do know the Ten Commandments, because these are the laws that govern mankind. And they are the laws which determine a person's happiness in life and fulfillment in life. Because if people are disobeying the Ten Commandments, there is a penalty. I mean, for example, the seventh commandment, you shall not commit adultery, which of course includes, by extension, not committing fornication. A lot of young people are messing up their lives because they have a lot of physical relationships before marriage, as a result of which, when they get married, they cannot commit to one person. And I get this all the time in talking to young people who've messed up their lives and they're trying to sort themselves out, but sometimes an addiction problem has started where they change partners every few weeks, for example, and they can't stop. They keep on doing it even after they get married. Many marriages have been ruined by this. And also many people, of course, haven't even got a clue that God's law says you shall not do these things, because they've never been taught it. And what they see on TV and in movies is exactly the opposite of God's law. So teaching our children the Ten Commandments in this context is very important. And that starts young. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 9 says, "These words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." In other words, you should be filled with the laws of God and able to effectively teach your children what those laws are. And those laws apply whether or not they believe them. Even if they reject God, those laws still apply. Deuteronomy 28 is the blessings and cursings chapter. And, you know, it is specifically about the nation of Israel, but it also applies to individuals. "It shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth," or above all individuals on the earth. You know, God will set you high if you diligently obey him. And again, our children need to understand this. And in verse 15 it says, "It shall come to pass if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God," and then it lists all the things that will go wrong. And, that, you know, I've seen that happen to so many people who've turned their backs on God. And I still believe that God continues to work with our children even when, you know, they may turn their backs on him, and eventually they may come to see many of these things. They will remember the things that they were taught and realize that by breaking God's law, they've made a mess of their lives. And they'll want to get back to trying to do things the right way. I've seen that happen too. Ephesians 6, just to look at what the Apostle Paul wrote. Ephesians chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." So, you know, this is what is said here. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." You know, this is something that, you know, we should listen to. Our parents do have our best interests at heart. Sometimes we may not agree with that. And, you know, I know often, I mean, I'm sure many of you have thought the same way when your kids are teenagers and young adults and they're dating different people. You know, you might think that, you know, you could choose a much better person for them. I'm sure you've thought that at times. I know I have. And, of course, in many societies, that is the way it's done. Again, I mentioned in the United States, you know, we've got a 50% divorce rate. When I was in Turkey last year for Unleavened Bread, I was told it was 3%. And I checked that on the internet, and it is, it's 3%. And then I looked up India, where it's 1.1%. In India, they arrange the marriages, the parents arrange the marriages of their children. Now, some of you might think, well, you know, they haven't got any choice. But actually, they do. You know, they still have British laws in India, in many cases, and you can divorce. Not a problem. But only 1.1% of the people divorce. That's all. 1.1% of couples. And that's when the marriages are arranged by the parents. The reason I mention this is because if you're a young person contemplating marriage, realize, you know, your parents may have some very good observations to make regarding your choice of spouse. Listen carefully, because they know you extremely well. So listen carefully to what they have to say. You know, in our society, we do not have to do what our parents say. I mean, I'm sure my parents would not have wanted me marrying an American simply because, you know, she would take me away. Not because she was a bad person, although that might have been the case too, I don't know. But, no, I mean, I'm just kidding. Diane's mother would have thought the same, that as an Englishman I'd take her away, you see. So they might have been against us for that reason. But having said that, you've got to make your own decision. But I'm using this as an illustration that the fact is parents do know you. And, you know, they might be able to see something that you cannot see. So listen carefully to what they have to say. Children, obey your parents and the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. So again, that promise there of future prosperity, of happiness as a result of that obedience to parents. Colossians chapter 3. Here's another scripture on this. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 20. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to God. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to God. So there's some scriptures there if you're tending to go against the wishes of your parents, just to think about some of these things. In Malachi chapter 2, we read about another problem that is a major contributory factor to this breakdown of the family in our society. And we've already touched upon it, but Malachi chapter 2 puts it very well, puts it bluntly in verse 16. For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce. And then it goes on and says, for it covers one's garment with violence. I'm sure it's not just a coincidence that the violence in our society has gotten worse since no-fault divorce was introduced exactly 40 years ago, 1971. Every state except New York introduced no-fault divorce by 1971. Some might have done it a little bit earlier. And New York is following right now. But New York's laws were pretty liberal anyway. But you know, divorce does lead to violence. 90% of the criminals in our prisons come from broken homes. And, you know, again, there's an anger there and a resentment and a bitterness in children that are the children of divorce. And, you know, they feel cheated. In fact, again, I know I've mentioned this before, but sometimes when I'm in Ghana on television, I'll watch a little bit of Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is an Arabic language news station. And although most of what they say is quite fine, they do have some interviews with, they used to interview Osama bin Laden, they'd interview other people who are thinking is the same way. And I remember a discussion once when the United States was lecturing, I think it was Colonel Gaddafi on human rights. And one of the ladies on this discussion made the observation, she said, "Who are the Americans to lecture us on human rights? One of the basic rights of every child is to have two parents. And yet 50% of American kids do not have two parents." And I thought, wow, that's a profound statement. I mean, you can't help but agree with what she said. She might have said it with a wrong attitude of, you know, anti-Americanism, but it's still a very good and very valid comment. And we as Christians need to be very careful to make sure that we do take marriage and the marriage commitment very seriously. Because Cal Thomas made the observation once, and Cal Thomas is a conservative, syndicated columnist. He belongs to one of the very conservative religious groups, Southern Baptists or some group like that. And he made the comment once when Christians were getting upset about gay marriage, because a lot of people were saying that gay marriage will destroy traditional marriage between a husband and wife. And he said, it isn't the gays who've destroyed marriage in this country. It's conservative Christians. Because conservative Christians have a divorce rate. They marry and remarry at a rate which is even higher than the secular people in the United States. And, you know, so we have not taken marriage seriously. And so how can we expect the rest of the country to take marriage seriously? And again, something for you to think about. God hates divorce, for it covers one's garment with violence. I remember once when we were visiting Alex and Mike down in Whitestown, which is just outside of Indianapolis where they live. A population of just a few hundred, maybe a couple of thousand. You know, one of those nice little rural communities. We came home one day. Alex had gone with us. Mike was working, and, you know, we'd taken Alex into town. We were doing something. And when we were driving back to the house, we saw a black helicopter above the town. And, you know, Alex wondered what it was, and I made some joke about how maybe they've had a massacre at the tea room or something. Just a joke, you know. But it turned out a triple homicide had taken place. And so that made Whitestown statistically the most dangerous community in the Indianapolis area for a while because of these murders. But a young man, 17 I think he was, had murdered his brother and both of his parents and stabbed them all to death. And it turned out he was a druggie. He was doing coke. And, you know, it turned out also that one of the parents, I think it was his mother, was a step-parent. And, you know, the point is, you know, the divorce, remarriage, step-parenting, again, statistically is a major contributory factor to violence. And often it is directed at children. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago a statistic that I heard on television, which was interesting, and I want to turn this into an article. But once every 5 hours, a child is murdered in the United States, usually by the parents. Sometimes a step-parent, but not always a step-parent. Once every 5 hours, five kids a day, which is a horrible statistic. And a lot of this violence does come back to divorce. Not all of it, but some of it comes back to divorce. The solution to this is to make sure that you marry the right person and be committed to stay together no matter what. And, you know, that's very important. It's also important that our children understand the importance of relationships. We live in a society where relationships are not portrayed as something that is important. Things are more important in our society, material things. And, you know, I see this all the time with children, my grandchildren even. Compared to West Africa. In West Africa, kids just don't have as many things. They're not as thing-oriented. But, you know, I think about it. I think about it a lot. I observe it. I try to figure out why is it that in our culture children very quickly latch on to things. And so, you know, taking Kurt's two children, for example, to the store used to be a nightmare. It's okay now because we've got them much more under control. But initially taking them to the store, you know, we'd go in for three things and come out with 13 because they would want everything. And you wonder, what is it about our culture that makes kids like that? They want everything. And, you know, why is it they want all the toys that are there, for example? Because you don't get this in West Africa in the same way. So you try to figure out what is the difference here. I'll come to that in a few moments. But first of all, we do need to emphasize to our children the importance of relationships. There is nothing, apart from their relationship with God, there is nothing that is more important than the family relationship. And I think that is emphasized more in most parts of the world than it is in ours. And when I say ours, again, I'm saying the US and Britain and Australia, Canada. You know, we are the countries that are suffering from these problems more than other countries are. Even that article from the Conservative Daily Mail in England brought out, it says, the charity has drawn comparisons between Britain and continental Europe, Spain, France, Italy, Germany, where people are said to be more supportive of youngsters and parents more willing to help each other out within their communities. So this is not as big a problem in continental Europe. Why is that? Why is it a bigger problem in our culture than it is in theirs? And I think there are good, sound reasons for that. Jesus Christ here answered a lawyer who asked him a question, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment." So, you know, we need to teach our children the most important thing is their relationship with God. We're not going to be around forever as parents. And we need to leave them with a relationship with God, even if they go into a different church. As long as they know that they can turn to God and talk to God about things. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. So love toward God and then love toward each other, beginning with family. These are the priorities. And we need to emphasize the importance of family. Now, in some cultures, it's taken to extremes. In some countries, family is everything. And, you know, if you go against the family, they'll kill you. They've got a big problem in England with immigrants from Pakistan and Bangladesh, Muslim immigrants. If one of the daughters of 14 or 15 dates a white English guy, she's likely to be killed by one of the brothers or even the father because she's brought shame on the family. You know, the family comes first. There is nothing more important than family. And we need to teach the importance of family, but we don't want to go to that extreme. But I think, again, in our culture, the importance of family has been greatly diminished. And it's been replaced, really, with the importance of other things. Things, for example, are especially important, material things. And I mentioned in continental Europe, they don't have such a big problem with their kids. I'm sure there's many reasons for that. They don't have as big a problem, for example, with alcoholism as we have in Britain and the United States. Why is it we have a bigger problem with alcohol abuse in young people? Good question. In England, you're supposed to be 18 before you drink. But you don't have to carry ID in England, so therefore, if you look older, you can get away with it at 14 or 15. But in the U.S., you've got to carry your driver's license, and you've got to be 21. So we have strict laws regarding alcohol consumption. We have a major problem with alcohol abuse. A lot of these other countries don't. And I think one reason is because in most of those countries, like France and Italy and Spain and Germany, and I've been to all of those except Spain, families sit down together in the evening. They have a meal that can take hours. It actually drives me nuts because I've got other things I want to do. I'm more American in this respect. But you sit down in France to a meal, and it will last 3 hours. Same in Italy, it'll last 3 hours. And they have like 8 courses, 1 course every half hour. But you talk all the way through the meal. So the family, you know, has a close relationship and is always talking. Also, alcohol is introduced to children when they're young, in moderation, a small glass of wine. So children grow up with alcohol, and it no longer has the mystique that it has, where it is forbidden. And, you know, in Germany, I remember when I was 16, I went over to Germany as an exchange student. I stayed in a city called Nuremberg, and I remember the family took us all out to lunch one Sunday. And, you know, I had a beer. And it was the first time I'd had beer with adults. I'd had beer, but nobody knew about it. But, you know, I had it was the first time I'd had it with adults. And I was surprised that they bought me a beer. And you could do that in Germany because we were a family, as were the parents. If I'd been by myself, I wouldn't have been able to get one. But I was able to have one with the family. In England, you could do the same thing some years ago. I think they've tightened up now. But I remember when I took my children over when they were teenagers, even at 14, they were allowed to have a drink with us in the pub as long as the parents were there. And, you know, so therefore, you know, they don't grow up with quite the same problems that we seem to have. But it's also important that the family is together and is talking all the time. You know, there's various reasons for these differences, but it's interesting. I think they do have closer families. And as a result of that, they don't seem to have some of these problems that we have and these articles on how children are becoming like animals. So family closeness is important. Of course, again, in our culture, one thing that's contributed to the death of the family or the breakdown of the family is that it is possible for people to leave home, to get their own apartment, to have their own car, to get their own job. It's possible for parents even to put away savings so that they don't need their children when they get older. They don't need their children to look after them. So we've destroyed the natural family cycle that went on for centuries, for thousands of years. And you know, I mean, we will get that back because our present economy is unsustainable in the long run. And when it collapses, when all the government's entitlements collapse, we will get that back. And families will no doubt be restored to a great extent at that particular time. But we now need to work on developing those close relationships with our children and helping them to understand the importance of family. Another problem, I think, in our culture is the role of media. Look at Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2. And this has contributed a great deal, I think, to you know, the breakdown of the family, to children bad-mouthing their parents. As I mentioned, in Ghana, the observation has been that the question has been, you know, why do we allow our children to answer us back, to bad-mouth us, which is what they see on television all the time. But that, you know, this is what is on TV, and of course it's on TV here, and this is what kids see on TV. It describes in verse 2, it describes in Ephesians 2, verse 2, it describes Satan as the prince of the power of the air. And really, we could not understand that until the invention of radio and television. And, of course, it's changed everything. You go back 100 years, the biggest influence in people's lives outside of the home was church. Whatever church they went to. They heard the Ten Commandments in whatever church they went to. You know, they got some of the laws of God, so they understood what was right and what was wrong. But, of course, the entertainment industry has replaced entertainment, has replaced religion in the lives of people. And now the biggest influence in people's lives is the entertainment industry. And Satan is the prince of the power of the air. Satan led the first rebellion. The family is the bedrock of society. So naturally he wants to encourage rebellion within the family. How does he do it? You know, it's interesting. You ask, whenever there's a big family problem and I'm asked to get involved, occasionally it happens, you ask teens why they badmouth their parents, and often they'll say, well, I don't. They think that they don't. They don't realize they're doing it because It's second nature because they've seen it on so many television programs. You know, people advertise on television because it pays. They know when they advertise that you'll buy their products. So what we see on the programs is also influencing people's minds, people's lives. And, you know, I think one of the regrets I have as an older parent now, I mean, all of my children are 30 plus, one regret I have is even though we lived in Ghana where there was no television, I still remember when we got a VCR as it was back then. Sounds antiquated now. It was exactly 30 years ago. We got a TV and a VCR. We bought them in England. We took them back to Ghana. And we could borrow tapes from a Lebanese tape library. And, you know, so our children did get TV on a Saturday night, on a Sunday, the weekends. And looking back, I wish I'd not done that. I wish we had just enjoyed those years without all of that. Because, let's face it, most of what you see is negative. It is not a good influence. It just isn't. It's a negative influence. And then you start to lose that influence in your children's minds as they watch these things. An observation I would make is that television, movies, music are too big an influence in our children's lives. And it's not so much what they watch as how much they watch. More equals worse. In fact, studies show, too, the more children watch television, the less well they do in schools. So, you know, we need to think about these things. It's interesting, even specific programs have had studies done on them. For example, a link has been shown between SpongeBob SquarePants and ADD, and even violence amongst children. And it's interesting when you see those things. Programs with bad language, for example, on HBO and Showtime. Children pick up the bad language. There's a link between bad language in children and aggressive behavior. And you see these kind of things all the time. You know, what do you do about it? Well, you reduce their exposure to some of those things. Do what you can. While you can, because when they get to 17 and 18, it's getting kind of late. Video games are also a major contributory factor. I tend to overlook these because I've never gotten into video games. But they're also a contributory factor. The use of these, really, should be dependent on behavior, including verbal behavior. Don't let children have their own TVs and restrict the amount of time they can spend watching television or playing video games. All of these are things that you can do as they're growing up. You know, I've often said that I wish we could have a Church of God Amish community. We've got just about every other Church of God. There's so many different Churches of God. If they started a Church of God and then in parentheses Amish, I probably would join it, because I'd like that, you know, away from all the electronic gadgets, all these influences, going back to a simple 18th century lifestyle. It would slow us all down. It would be good. It would be a great relaxer, a great de-stressor. And, you know, the Amish are more effective when it comes to raising their children because they don't have a lot of those influences. You know, I question the wisdom of the Amish that they do have this belief that at 16 children should be allowed to go on what they call a rumspringer. For 2 years they can run around. That's what it means, run around for 2 years. Sow their wild oats, so to speak. Let them go off, do their own thing. After 2 years they've got to come back and either commit to the Amish community, which means no more running around, no more cars, no more cell phones, no more TVs, no video games, nothing. Or they leave the Amish community. But if they leave the Amish community, they don't see their family again either. And, you know, they do have quite a high retention rate, but some do leave and they reject their families as well, which is kind of harsh. But, you know, just the idea of a non-electronic lifestyle has an appeal. It certainly is a great de-stressor. and would stop some of these influences in our children's lives. But we have to learn to cope with the society in which we live, so we've got to try and do some of these common sense things to try and reduce the bad influences, the negative influence in their lives. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 3. Here's another scripture. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves. You know, we've gotten to this point in society, I think, where people are very self-centered. And a lot of this has to do with our emphasis on material things. I mentioned before how even I've come across problems in the last 10 years that never heard of before that. And, you know, I think of more than one couple who, after they got married, they could not share a bedroom. They had grown up in their own bedrooms with their own TVs, their own electronic systems, hi-fi, whatever, everything. And they could not share. You know, and this was never the case. You think back in the 1800s, you got seven or eight kids in one bed. You know, so they had no problem sharing. But, you know, now a lot of kids have a problem sharing because they've had everything for themselves, to themselves. And, you know, we forget about these things, and we think we're doing the right thing by giving them everything that they want. But in actual fact, that isn't the best way to approach things. Going on, it says, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents. You see, it's all in the same passage here. And again, this is a phenomenon of our age. I mean, I know there's always been people who've been disobedient to parents, but not like it is today, where it is, a pandemic, really. Romans chapter 1, verse 30. Romans 1 describes the progression, and again it applies very much to today, of how people reject God as the creator and they embrace a theory like evolution, for example, and gradually they get further and further away from God. In verse 28, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They're whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. And again, it describes the age in which we live in the Western countries. In fact, not all the Western countries, because it's not like this in Italy or France or Spain. It's more like this in the Anglo-Saxon countries, the white English-speaking countries. And we have to ask why. Again, you get back to material things, for example, and the desire to have everything, that's where the emphasis is in our society. And, it's interesting, when they had the riots in England in August, it was mostly young people. And supposedly they were rioting because of austerity, because the government was cutting all kinds of programs. But when they rioted, they broke into stores and took all the electronic equipment that they could find. This is where the priority is. You know, just wanting all of those things. These are the values that we've taught our kids. Not us in this room so much, but, this is the problem with our society today. Of course, another factor is it's so hard for us to discipline our children today because of the way the laws are. I mentioned Ron and I, our dads would have, dealt with things a certain way. And, of course, it's not like that today. But look at Exodus 21 and verse 15, just what it says in the Old Testament. I mean, this is inconceivable in our society, but I'm sure in some countries they would do this. Exodus 21, verse 15, he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. That's what God said. You don't want that kind of thing spreading. And so this was what God's law said. I remember a long time ago, I can't even remember the situation. I think it was in England. It might have been here. I get confused. But I remember a case where a young guy had committed some horrendous crime. And it was the mother who gave him up to the police. And I thought, wow, you know, that was just amazing. Because so many people today would cover up when their child has done something really bad. They try and protect them. Which, of course, is wrong, because when we understand what the Bible says, it is our responsibility as parents that if our children break the law, then they should have to deal with whatever the penalty is. And I'm thankful that my parents did practice that. You know, I remember once when I was playing football, soccer, in the streets, the street where we lived, I can't remember what happened, but we did something that was wrong, and the policeman came to the house, and my parents made me deal with the policeman myself. And I'm thankful they did that, because it taught me a lesson, you know. And you know, we don't want to be protecting our children from the consequences when they do things that are wrong, whatever law that they might break. And it's interesting, too, in the Old Testament, when a young person had committed a capital offense, you know, the punishment was stoning. It was the mother who cast the first stone. It was the mother who cast the first stone. I think that's very interesting. Of course, we can't do those things today, but there are ways to discipline. Remember, one of our goals as parents is to try to teach self-discipline. We can always take away privileges, TV, video games, sports, money. But in fact, one way to help with building self-discipline is to ensure that our teens earn all of these things themselves. I mean, one of the regrets I have is helping my kids when they became teenagers to buy a car. I regret it because they didn't appreciate the cars enough. The reason why I did it was because I was tired of driving them everywhere. And I'm sure you've all identified with this as parents. So you think, that I'm sick and tired of having to take him to this, that, and the other, or take her to this, that, and the other. Let me help him get a car, and then they can take care of themselves. But they really don't appreciate things when you pay for it yourself. You really need to have them take care of it themselves. So first things first, get a job, and then save your money and buy yourself a car. And then they will appreciate it so much more. They'll look after it. And never co-sign for a teenager, because if you co-sign for a teenager, you are, in effect, signing for yourself, accepting the responsibility of paying back that money for yourself. But the point is, all of these things build, you know, self-discipline, and that's something that's lacking in our society today, and one reason why we have this problem with such a lack of discipline, because self-discipline has not been taught. Proverbs 22, verse 6, reminds us of the importance of this. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. So, you know, you start with your children when they're young. You teach them self-discipline. You teach them how to teach themselves things and be responsible for themselves, be responsible for their own area, you know, whether it be their own room or whether it be just part of a room, maybe one side of a room, for example. You teach them to be responsible for that area, to keep it clean, to make things clean and tidy, neat and tidy. And, you know, to balance their budget when you give them an allowance. You know, these things begin in early childhood. You know, one other thing, communication is very important. Look at Isaiah chapter 1. Isaiah chapter 1. The scripture comes to mind because I think it applies to us. God is our Father. And, you know, we as fathers, and mothers as well, to a great extent, this is applicable. This is the approach we should take as our children get older. Come now, in verse 18, come now, let us reason together, says the Lord. You know, God says, let us reason together. We can reason with God. We can talk to God about our problems, about the challenges in our lives. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. God is very forgiving, and we as parents need to be forgiving. But we need to reason with our children and help them understand the importance of obedience. Obedience to the laws of the land, obedience which begins at home with parents. And I think as our children get older, they can question some of the rules that we may have. But, you know, they need to have the rules explained to them and why they are beneficial to them. Because if you don't have rules, you've got chaos, you've got anarchy. If you don't have laws in society, you've got anarchy. Everybody would run around shooting at each other. That's the end result of anarchy, which you've got in some parts of the world. And we could easily have that. And it could happen. I mean, we've got, even now, we've got these this movement, the Occupy Wall Street movement, you know, that could easily grow into something a lot bigger and could do, you know, lead to a breakdown in law and order. I'm not saying it will, but it could, because those things have happened elsewhere. Neil Ferguson, one of my favorite writers, drew an analogy between the Arab Spring and this movement, the Occupy Wall Street movement. This is how the Arab Spring started, and it led to revolutions across the Arab world. This is how the fall of communism started in 1989, 1990, just with people, mostly young people, getting together and demonstrating, complaining, because they felt like they were missing out. You know, it could lead to that kind of thing. And, you know, that's the situation that we're in. Finally, one other thing is to pray for your children. I mean, I'm sure as parents there's been times when you've been brought to your knees by your children. I know we have been, because you realize just that sometimes things are out of your hands. As parents, you've done your bit. There's nothing more you can do if your kids get involved in something that's bad. And so you have to put them into God's hands and just leave them with God and just wait. All things work together for good. Hopefully things will work out. They don't always do. I've had friends who've lost their children for one reason or another. Either they've gotten into some bad company or maybe they've taken their own life, for example. Those things have happened. But there comes a point sometimes where all you can do is pray for your children. So it's not easy raising children in the Western world today. In the past, parents were indisputably in control. The father, actually, you know, until about 100 years ago, the father was totally in control. Women had no rights until well into the 1800s. I'm not saying that was right. I don't think that was right. But that's the way it was. And we've gone now, you know, to the other extreme where, you know, children have all the rights. And that's one reason why we have a lot of the problems that we've got. And sometimes there's no easy answers when it comes to dealing with some of the issues that we have with our children, especially as they get older. But hopefully some of the points that I've raised today will help you in your situation, or at least give you something to think about.